Hi, welcome to Turkey Confidential. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and this is the Splendid Tables annual live Thanksgiving morning call-in. And it's brought to you by APM, American Public Media, and by the employee owners of Bob's Red Mill Natural Foods, stone millers of over 400 whole grain flours, hot cereals, and baking mixes. Bob'sRedMill.com. Whole grain foods for every meal of the day. Now, in case you're a first-timer, here's how we roll. We're celebrating two holidays today, Turkey Day and Hanukkah, and anything goes. So if the turkey has a core of solid ice, you call us. Your potato pancake sucked up all the oil in the pan, we're here for you. And if you've barely turned on a stove in your life and you've been elected to do the Thanksgiving feast, triage is waiting. And we'd love to hear your stories, like, you know, the roofer who does his turkey in a tar bucket. Well, there's lots of ways that you can get to us. You can pick up the phone, call us at 800-537-5252, connect with us on Facebook and Twitter, use hashtag Turkey Confidential. We also want to see what your Thanksgiving table looks like, so share your photos with us on Instagram. Now, we have some great guests joining us today, including Chop's Ted Allen. But let's get going with the man who really knows how to get a party started. You see him every week on The Chew. He's one of our favorites and a longtime friend of the show, the one and only Mario Batali. Hey, Mario, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, huh?
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. What are you up to today?
Today we are just about, Susie's making a dessert right now, an upside down cranberry cake. I made my turkey porchetta prepared yesterday, and I'm just about ready to get the smoker and the wood burning oven going so I can cook it all with natural fire.
Now, are you in New York? Or are you?
No, I'm in Michigan. I'm just north of Traverse City, right here on the frozen lake, looking over at you, Lynn.
Oh, I can see you.
There you go.
There you are. It's the... You know what? It was the red hair. That's
there you
it.
Go.
Yeah. Right.
And the forest fire behind me that I'm trying to get going.
Yes, because it's 40 below zero right
now. It's only in the 20s, but it's blowing right off the lake right now. It feels fab.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
We Minnesotans understand such things.
Exactly.
Yeah. Whenever anybody says, do you ever cook your turkey outside? Yeah, we start at Thanksgiving and we have it for Christmas. Hey, Mario, you want to take some calls with me?
I would be delighted.
We have got, we've got Rachel calling, and she's calling from Minneapolis.
Oh, good.
Rachel, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Hi, Lynn. Hi, Mario. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Good
it's
to talk
honor.
To you.
I have sort of a philosophical question for you today. So this Thanksgiving, I'm hosting my family, and I am a total holiday host novice. I'm the youngest. I live in a tiny, tiny apartment. And I decided to go the non-traditional route on top of that of preparing a veritable vegetable feast, no bird. So I'm really excited, but I have a bad case of the nerves. Could you impart some words of comfort, maybe a mantra, if you will, that I could chant as I try not to burn down Thanksgiving dinner?
Mario, what do you think?
Well, first of all, remember the most important thing, that along the road of cooking, joy is found throughout the trip and at the end of the trip. So as long as you're having a good time doing the cooking, everyone around you will probably not even notice that they're missing something.
That's you know, that's really true. And the other thing is, I mean, this is such, it's basic, but it's the stuff you forget. Read the recipe or whatever you're making up in your head. Go over it in your mind. Make sure you've got all the ingredients gathered. You know, and I know it's tiny, so it may be that you literally take a cake pan or whatever and you put everything you need in that cake pan, pile it up, and you put it in the living room for, you know, until you're ready for it. But if you've got everything lined up and you kind of lay out a plan in your head and know that, you know what, it's still one meal. It's one
also meal. Keep in mind, everything doesn't have to be served super hot right out of the oven. There are a lot of things that do well sitting on the counter after having come out a half hour earlier and are served nice and warm, but not necessarily stinging hot.
Yeah, and that's true. Right. That's true of a lot of vegetables, a lot of vegetable dishes. So, and you know, breathe, enjoy it. I know it's hard, but it's, you know, it's also, I think you are philosophical about it. It's the kind of thing, maybe you're going to serve this meal in courses. Because, you know, the potatoes didn't bake quite the way you want them.
So. And also keep in mind, don't let perfection be the enemy of excellence.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Can I write that down?
You can.
All right.
There's the mantra there. I'll be developing a game plan.
All right, you got it. Don't let perfection be the what?
Enemy of excellence.
The enemy of excellence. And Rachel, have a wonderful one.
Thank you. You too.
All right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
That was great, Mario. I mean, really, you guys, you can reach us, 800-537-5252. You can tweet us, use hashtag Turkey Confidential, go to Facebook, or shoot us an email. Go to splendidtable.org. It's nice to know how you can get there. Hey, Mario, do you have sort of a fast trick that you keep up your proverbial sleeve, you know, when you want to have something fast for like a side on Thanksgiving?
Well, I mean, you know, the whole idea of corn being available in both polenta and dried and frozen kernel form, you can have three or four different attacks to make something very quickly and not very much time at all. So that's always an excellent side for me. Also, anything to do with mushrooms goes so well with turkey, and they're not expensive, and they're easy to hold. And even if you had a few dried morels like we do up here in Michigan and Minnesota, but even just some dried regular mushrooms mixed with some chopped button mushrooms, saute them in a couple of minutes, and you have something people are going to go crazy for. If you throw a little garlic and a little thyme in there, everything's golden.
You're right. You're right. Garlic, thyme, a little bit of butter or olive oil, and some mushrooms, and you're home free. It's great.
Right.
Oh, okay. Hey, Jeff is calling, and let's see. I can't see where Jeff is calling from, but, oh, Jeff's got an email. He wants to know if you've got any advice for working in the kitchen of your mother-in-law. And and by the way, she's a Virgo.
As am I.
You are a Virgo?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
We Virgos are very forgiving if everything's in the right order. The advice is walk in knowing what you're doing. Always, if you're working in someone else's kitchen, the idea that you have to take all the pots and pans out and you're not really sure and you're not really sure of the steps and you're not really sure if the oven's supposed to be 325 or 335, keep a little note or a little sheet of everything that needs to go in order, proceed nicely, and more significantly, not only clean up after yourself, but clean up after everyone else. Because a clean kitchen is a happy and organized kitchen. It takes a few more minutes. The desire to make things clean makes you look golden, even if you were to burn the brulee.
You know, that's some of the best advice I've ever heard. If anyone would come in and be right behind me cleaning up the kitchen.
Love them no matter what they make.
It could be Frankenstein and
right,
I'd give
exactly.
them a kiss. Kara's on the line from Louisville. And she,
Hi,
Kara, what's on your mind? What do you want to talk about?
I have half a duck that I would like to roast. And I have a recipe for a whole duck and a recipe for a duck breast. But I kind of am stuck in the middle here.
Okay. Well, how do you like your duck? Do you like your duck like Chinese style cooked all the way through, or are you looking for something like gourmet fancy with a medium rare breast and maybe the leg comb feet?
I just kind of want to roast it.
Okay.
I don't really have anything too fancy in mind.
Do you have any vegetables in the house, like root vegetables?
Yes, I have all kinds of like onions, potatoes, carrots, everything.
Okay, so chop a bunch of those up into like 1/2-inch pieces. Lay them in a bottom of a pan, a roasting pan, a saute pan, whatever you want. I would probably quickly rub the duck with a combination of salt, brown sugar, thyme, and rosemary, all chopped together so that it gives a nice little glaze to it. I would prick the skin on the breast and the leg with a sharp point of a knife or a skewer. Lay it in there, roast it at like 350 for an hour and 20 minutes. Pull it out and take a look at it. I think you'll have something that's already delicious. And the fat that drips down into those vegetables below make them even more delicious. Use them as the side dish all by itself. I wouldn't even recommend a sauce. Maybe I just make a simple little mustard vinaigrette.
Thank you so much.
You are going to love this. This is fabulous. I've just been making notes, Mario.
Oh, good.
Okay. And is that fat? That's fat side up, of course.
Yes, fat side up, cut side down.
Okay, thank you.
Then you stand a good chance of crisp. If it's not quite as crisp as you'd like it, throw it into the broiler, but very carefully monitor that because you can get some good crispness, but it can also just pop into a little bit of a burnt spot.
Okay. Yeah. All right, thanks, Million.
And by the way, when the duck's gone, you can even crisp those vegetables under the broiler, but be careful because, as Mario said, it's going to burn. But
they'll light right up.
Oh, boy, does that sound good.
Mm-hmm.
It's reminding me of the ducks I used to. I haven't done a duck in ages. Do you do duck all the time?
We at the restaurants do the comb feet of the leg, and then we saute the breast medium. I don't like rare duck. I'm just never been a big fan of it. But medium on the other side of medium, and then a comb feet leg, and serve it with bravada, which is that magnificent turnip and kind of leftovers from the bottom of the winemaking barrels stuff in Friuli that I'm just a big, huge fan of.
Oh, that's fabulous. Yeah, and you can simulate that, well, ever so slightly. Take some red grapes and crush them up with good red wine.
Right.
And boil that down to a syrup and throw that in
so
with
good.
Turnips. Oh, it's so delicious. Rutabaga likes it, too.
Yeah.
All right, enough of this romancing that we've got here. We've got Mary on the line from Marshfield, Vermont. Mary, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So I have a question about a tart tatin.
Tartin, yeah, tartin. Right.
So I made one yesterday, and I made, you know, the caramel sauce, and
right.
it was really good, but really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if I could use honey instead of sugar to make the caramel sauce.
It's still going to be pretty sweet, don't you think, Mario?
Yeah, it'll be sweet. What kind of do you have apple variations? Because if you have the really tart apples, that helps. But it is kind of a sugary dessert, I must say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's kind of supposed to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's that upside down apple tart. I admire your ambition because I think it's one of the most fabulous things.
That said, how much butter and sugar did you use?
I used I made a little one. So
right?
I used 1 tablespoon butter and like a little less than 1/4 cup of sugar.
So you could probably cut the sugar in half there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's going to hurt a darn thing at all.
Okay. And does honey caramelize the same way?
It's different, doesn't it? I mean, Mara, honey doesn't behave the way sugar does in a syrup.
Well, honey quickly will start that, but it will also go quickly to hard if it goes a little off.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, you might try it when you don't have guests.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have guests, I always like to do something I've done before, at least as close as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Hey, have
Happy
a good one.
Have
a good one.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Hey, you can talk to Mario, because if you call 800-537-5252, he just might be here. And you can send us an email. Go to splendidtable.org. Barb's calling from Michigan.
Okay.
Barb, are you right down the road?
Yes, I
am. Okay.
I am making Mario Batali's oven-roasted turkey breast porchetta style, and I had a little argument with the butcher. It says 1 4-pound boneless turkey half breast. He gave me both the breasts.
Beautiful.
Pardon me?
That's not a problem.
So what do I do with all
Well, are they attached by the skin?
Yes.
Oh, that's even better. So you do the same thing. Did he butterfly it open, or do you need help butterflying it?
No, I need help butterflying it open.
Okay,
so you set it flat on the table with what would be the head toward your body.
Yes.
And you'll see that there are two what look like little tenderloins.
Yes.
You fold them to the outside.
Yes.
Both away from the center. Then you take your knife and you look at the thicker part right underneath that, and you slice from the furthest part away from you toward you, moving the tenderloin further outside, and you'll kind of go halfway into that meat, and you'll see that the tenderloin starts to move to the left or the right, depending on which way you're going.
Okay.
What the butterfly idea is to open it so that you get a relatively consistent thickness all the way across. So you'll take a sharp knife and kind of make little cuts, continuing to pull that tenderloin over there until it's about 3 or 4 inches to its actual outside away from the center.
Okay.
Then, when you do it on the other side, you'll take the knife and going against the grain of the meat, cut 2 or 3 slashes about 1 inch apart from each other, going diagonally the other way. So what you've created is what kind of looks like a quilt with the skin on the bottom, the flesh on the top, and what looks more or less a little bit more consistent. At that point, you could take a saute pan and just kind of pound it, and so it's kind of relatively consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Then you take the filling, put it in, and when you roll it up, go from left to right as opposed from north to south.
Okay, perfect.
Does that make sense? Thanks, Barb.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And in case, Barb, in case you didn't hear us, Mario's doing the same thing.
Exactly.
Hey, what do you like as a porchetta filling?
You know, I like fennel sausage, caramelized onions, and fennel seed, fennel pollen. And then I threw in ciabatta and a little bit of toasted chestnuts.
Oh, what could hurt? Oh, that
exactly.
Sounds, boy, does that sound good.
It's so good. I can't wait.
Wow. Well, Sarah's calling from Minneapolis. Sarah, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Hi.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. This is my first Thanksgiving dinner ever, my first turkey.
It's going to be great.
Yes. And my uncle has graciously offered to bring the stuffing, but he wants to put the cold stuffing in my turkey 2 hours into cooking the turkey, and I have not seen that anywhere, so I want to know if that's okay.
Tell your uncle to take his hands off your bird.
I know, right?
Under no circumstances put something in halfway through cooking.
And not okay.
In all honesty, I never put the stuffing inside the bird because it makes it inconsistently cook, and it's also a dangerous place for it to live, even if you were to take it outside and immediately remove it after you've taken it out of the oven.
Wonderful. That was my instinct. I just wanted to double check.
You tell Uncle that Uncle Mario said no.
Okay. Thank you so much.
No problem.
And just in case there was any doubt, right?
Right.
Exactly. Mario, tell me something.
Yes.
How many people are you cooking for?
Today, I think 22.
Oh, a mere bagatelle.
Exactly. That's a number that's, after 30, it becomes work. Under 25, it's kind of a walk of the park. And under 15, it's not really a party at all. It's more like dinner on the house.
I see. But you know what? Do you always end up doing the cooking?
You know what? I so enjoy it that it never feels like a struggle to me. And in all honesty, I even like to clean. So I keep it clean. By the time we're done with the dishes, by the time we're done with the dinner, the only thing left to clean are the plates and the knives and the forks.
You know, that's the sign of a real pro.
Well, because it's actually just if you're working through all of the stuff and you're looking like an artist, as it gets messier, it actually becomes more difficult to be good. Because when the stuff isn't exactly where you want it, you have to stop and you may miss one of the critical brown points or overcook something or undercook something or rush through it. If it's clean and organized and everything is in its order and its place, then it's much easier to be a better cook.
Right, right. You don't get confused.
Right.
From Facebook, Daniel is terrified. This is his first turkey and he wants to know, what should he baste it with? Now, I have an opinion, but I'd love to know yours.
Well, I don't really baste.
You don't?
No. Well, I mean, mine's a porchetta. I mean, it's sitting in a wood-burning oven. There's not much no reason to baste.
Well, that's true.
So you tell me, what would you baste with, Lynn?
Well, I'm sorry. It's the Italian background, but I baste with wine. And now I've got two approaches. If I'm doing a fast roast, you know,
right.
the 450, 10 minutes a pan, I
right.
don't baste.
Right.
But if I do the slow roast, I use wine, red, white. I may use some of the, you know, if there's any liquid from any of the seasoning I've put on the bird, that'll go too. But I keep basting from the pan juices because I keep feeling that I'm giving the turkey back its own flavor.
Right.
And the real key to this, by the way, is to me, there are two prime things on the Thanksgiving table.
Right.
Turkey skin.
Right.
And gravy.
I'm right with you. And a close second is the stuffing. The turkey's actually the third for me, I must say.
You know, turkey for me falls way down. I love the sides. But
right.
but that's why I just baste. It's something that makes me feel better. So I figure the bird may work better.
Well, when you're doing this slow roast, what's the temperature and how many minutes per pound?
It's generally about 325.
Yeah.
The turkey is not on a rack. It's
right.
sitting on vegetables
right.
because it gives more flavor. And anyway, I usually do between 13 and 15 minutes to the
right.
pound.
I
do stuff sometimes. I used to stuff all the time. I don't stuff as much now. And I want to have an internal temperature of about 160, 165
right
in the center of the breast. So is that about what you do?
Yes, perfect. That's exactly what I like.
I can picture you pulling that baby out of that wood-fired oven, though.
Yeah, it's going to be crisp. There's no time to baste in there. Can't even reach in there, to be honest with you.
Well, of course you can't. But this summer, it's going to be building an oven.
Right.
I've got to do it.
It's the best thing that ever happens to you.
Can you take one more call with us?
Absolutely.
All right. We've got Tamara from St. Charles, Missouri. Tamara, what is your calling? Excuse me, I'm backwards here. What do you want to know?
Well, Tamara was a little too nervous to talk to the two of you, so she's handed me the phone. This is Kevin.
Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Oh, tell her not to be nervous. It's okay.
We've got a dozen folks coming over. We kind of mixed a couple of turkey recipes, and we've got a little science issue here, I think. The turkey was brined for about 3 days in some kosher salt and some sugar and vegetables and the like, and then put it into a crock pot and slow cooked it for about 8 hours, and now it's a little salty and a little dry.
Yeah. Okay. Mario, what's your thought?
Two things. You take it, is it intended to be served like a regular turkey bone? I mean, with all the bones and everything in it?
Actually, that's not going to work out. It sort of deboned itself in
right.
the crock pot.
Right,
so.
Right.
Well, then there's an interesting American-Italian dish called turkey tetrazzini, where you would take noodles and you would blanch them lightly like you're going to make a baked pasta, make a bechamel, and then lay the whole thing together with a couple of the pieces of the skin on top, and that's kind of a dish. If it's dry, and it's so dry that you really can't enjoy it, that's probably your best bet.
The idea is
you can do to re-moisturize it?
Yeah, you it's once the turkey's lost its juices, you've got a salty broth, it's kind of hard to do that. But if you add a sauce to it, as Mario was saying, a bechamel is a white sauce. You know, it's equal parts of butter and flour that you cook together for about 4 or 5 minutes. You don't want it to brown. But you stir it with a whisk in a saucepan. And for every 2 tablespoons of flour that you've got in there, you add about a cup and a half of milk or cream or half and half. And you cook that. You let it bubble for about 5 minutes or so until you can't taste any raw flour.
Okay.
And you want about maybe 3 cups of it, right, Mario?
Right.
And the idea is, now you can flavor that. You can throw in fresh basil. You can add some bay leaves. You can throw in nutmeg.
Don't season it, though, because you've got a salt issue already. So
right.
Don't add any salt at all.
Right. But you can throw in other seasonings. And then you boil up that pasta. You toss the shredded turkey. Just pull the bones off of the turkey and pull the skin off, too, because that skin is really tasty.
Yeah.
That's going to have a lot of flavor. Bits of the skin and toss that together. And as Mario said, put some skin on top. And then you just slip that in the oven and you serve it once it's been bubbling. And you throw some cheese in there if you want. Parmesan,
one thing,
anything.
If you didn't want to use pasta, you could do the same exact thing without pasta at all. And then you'll have like a turkey gratin. And then it doesn't make it look maybe like you made a mistake so much. You know, you take all that beautiful turkey out, which has great flavor because you brined it and you cooked it slow. And although it's a little on the dry side, when you pick the whole thing apart, take all the bones off, just put the bechamel over that without noodles at all and do a nice little turkey gratin and serve it with your traditional sides and say you're modern.
There you go.
It's an original way of doing turkey.
Great. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Yeah, until tomorrow, it's going to be okay.
Okay.
All right.
Mario, you know, it's really amazing the things we end up dealing with on this day. You know, I had a turkey that I cooked so long it came apart in the oven.
Yeah. Well, because people are very intent on doing the right thing for their family, and they often bite up more than they can chew, and they only do this dish once a year. So it's not so intuitive as the way they'd normally make their great stir fry or their you know, sauerbraten or their, you know, braised
pot roast. Exactly. Yeah, the expectations are really amazing. You can reach us at 800-537-5252. One more call. We've got Nick in Baltimore. Nick, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Pan that's in your bedroom, not the guest room.
Excuse me? Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm not Nick, but I'm Lisa.
Nick, I have to know, a pan in the bedroom, do we want to know about this? Nick, hello?
Hi, it's not Nick.
Oh, who is it?
Who is
Lisa,
it?
From Buffalo.
Oh, Lisa.
Lisa.
I don't have any pan in my bedroom.
Good.
Oh, all right. Well, you know, I think Nick might have been a little embarrassed, but we don't want to, you know, we don't want to impose.
No judgment. Right. But I have a question. We were lucky enough this year to get a locally grown heritage turkey that this wonderful woman grew for us, and the foxes didn't get this one. So we've got it, and it's about 20 pounds, maybe a little bigger. And I'm just wondering if there's any special tips. We did brine it. And I just wonder if there's any special tips in terms of getting it cooked because it's so large, and I don't know if there's any difference because it's heritage turkey or not, and getting it cooked while keeping the breast moist and the rest of it cooked.
Well, I like your fast roast method, Nick. I mean, I'm sorry, what's your name?
Lynn. But you can call
me. I know you're Lynn.
That's Lisa.
Lisa. I like the fast roast method where you put it in the oven. Well, here's what I would recommend. I would put it. Do you have an oven that holds it, I assume?
Yes.
All right. So then I would put it in at a 425 degree oven for about a half hour. Then I would drop the heat to 350, and I would go 10 to 12 minutes until you get the thickest part of the thigh at 155, 160. Then take it out. It will carry through to 165, and you'll have a nice succulent bird, especially since you brined it already.
Fabulous. It looks beautiful.
Excellent.
Even not cooked, so I think it's going to be really wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
You
Excellent.
Are welcome, and have a great one.
Oh, you too.
And Mario, you have a great one, too. Thanks so much for doing this morning.
Thanks for having me, Lynn. It's always a luxury to be near you.
Well, oh, my dear, what can I say?
All right.
Have a great one.
All right, you too. Bye.
Bye. That was Mario Batali. Now I'm going to do a little shilling for Mario. If you're in Chicago, check out Mario's newest theme park for food lovers, the store Eataly, and it's opening on Monday. Call us 800-537-5252. You can reach us on Twitter. Just use hashtag Turkey Confidential. Of course, there's Facebook, and you can send us an email, splendidtable.org. Nick in Baltimore is on the line. Nick, welcome. What do you want to talk about?
Hey, happy Thanksgiving.
And happy Thanksgiving to you, too. What are you up to?
I'm on my way to see Mom and Dad, and part of our Thanksgiving is oysters. We always do them on the half shell. We make oyster stew, and I was wondering if you had any suggestions for some grilled oysters this year.
Ooh, golly. You know, I'm thinking about how they're done a little south of you in the Carolinas, you know, where they're put on a pan over an open fire and, or, you know, grilled that way. But if you're going to slip them in the oven, right?
I'd like to do them over fire.
Oh, okay. You put them on the grill?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Let's go for broke here. Let's do a lot. Do you have any shallots handy?
I do.
Okay. Mince up a bunch of shallots and then work that in. And you can do this in the food processor with butter and thyme,
okay,
and thyme and salt and pepper and the merest whisper of nutmeg, if you've got it, okay? This is so classic. And you just spoon a lot of that on top of each one of those oysters and then put the oyster on the grill. Now, you know, don't have it super hot, okay? Because, you know, the trick here is you don't want to cook the oyster all the way through. You want to have
right.
some of the juiciness. And you're going to probably get some spillover of the sauce. But what you want to do is put that over that grill, and then you can use tongs or whatever you want to use. As they start to bubble and you see the edges just beginning to get a little on the firm side, you pull them off and you put them on a plate. I would do a plate full of salt so you can just stick them in that salt so they don't tip. And you eat those babies. And they are going to be so good.
My mouth is watering. I can't wait.
That's my job. I have to. It's my destiny in life to do that to people.
Thank you very much. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
And to you. May it be a great one for you and the family.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. Hey, I've got a gravy trick for you. You know, if the gravy's really wimpy, before you add the broth to the pan juices, this is what you're going to do. You're going to put a tablespoon of tomato paste, which is loaded with umami, and you're going to put about a quarter of a cup of wine in there, and you're going to stir that, scraping up all the bits from the pan juices, all right, and cook that down just for a moment or two. And then you're going to add the broth, but you're going to add it in layers. You're going to boil down the first batch, and then boil down the second, and then finally the last batch goes in, and then you cook it for a bit of time, you thicken it. But that wine and that tomato paste is your great tick, is your great trick, I'm sorry, to get that some oomph into that gravy. You've been listening to Turkey Confidential. We're going to be back with more of your calls and Chop's Ted Allen. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and you're listening to our annual Thanksgiving Day broadcast, Turkey Confidential, from APM, American Public Media.
I'm thankful because you care. I'm thankful for dreams we share. When you came along, I was born anew. That's why I'm thankful to you. Oh, I'm thankful for happy hours. I'm thankful to all the flowers that smiles up at us from underneath the dew. Darling, I'm thankful to you. You seem so far above me. Each time you said you love me, a rainbow shoots across the sky. I've made quite a catch, and though I'm not your match, I'll do my best to satisfy. Oh, thankful baby. For...
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper with Turkey Confidential, the Splendid Tables Nationwide Culinary Call-In, brought to you by APM, American Public Media. It's a big holiday this year with the addition of Hanukkah, so get to us any way you can. You can pick up the phone, 800-537-5252, connect with us on Facebook, send us your questions on Twitter using hashtag Turkey Confidential. Well, Ted Allen is joining us. He's the one and only host of the Food Network's Chopped. Ted, hi, it's Lynn. How are you? Happy Tea Day.
Thank you, Lynn. I'm very, very well, and it's always nice to hear your voice, but your timing is awful.
What's going on? So what's happening?
My kitchen is a wreck, and I don't have time to talk about it on the radio.
Well, what are you doing today?
Well, you know, Thanksgiving is one of my very favorite holidays and certainly one of my favorite meals to cook every year. And there's just nothing like the aromas that, you know, they start about half an hour after that bird goes in the oven. That first waft of turkey before it fills the whole house. And that's what's happening now. Oh, I love it. Oh,
this is great. Hey, Ted, we've got all these calls waiting. You want to take a call with me?
Absolutely.
Okay. Madeline is calling from Portland, Oregon. Madeline, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
So what can we help you with?
So I read that the original Thanksgiving meal probably involved a lot of eel. So I got my hands on a bunch of eel for tonight's feast, and I was wondering if you had any suggestions for preparing it, because I've never prepared it before.
First of all, I have to congratulate you on your adventurousness, and I wonder, how does your family feel about this?
Well, it's a Friendsgiving, so we're being adventurous today.
So everybody's prepared.
We don't have any grandparents to impress.
Or seven-year-old kids.
So, Ted, you've seen everything made on Chopped. What about eel?
For heaven's sake. Well, I mean, the main thing I know about eel is that you've got to peel it. And traditionally what one would do is nail the head of the eel to a board to keep it still, and then sort of split the skin down the center and peel it off. And that's also true of rattlesnake, which, by the way, is never worth cooking.
Good to know. Thank you.
Good to know. But honestly, I've only watched other people do it, normally in a competitive environment. I know you want to be careful not to overcook it.
So I have to ask a key question. Are they alive?
Yes.
All right.
Well, are they in the tub? Where are they?
They're in a bag.
Okay. All right. This is what you're going to want to do. Get them on a board, and if you don't nail it down, do some sort of vise, because you want to keep the head out of the action. Now, there is something really interesting. If you grab an eel by the tail and just let it hang, it goes dumb.
I knew that.
Yeah, you knew that.
Uh-huh. No, I didn't know that.
But here's the deal. You want to cut off the head,
okay,
and then split it down the belly, and you get rid of everything that's in there. And what I always do with any kind of fish is, you know, you'll see a little blood along the, you know, the main bone in the fish. Same thing with an eel. Uh-huh. Run a knife along that to just get rid of all of that, you know, and rinse it really, really well and wipe it down. What I'm going to suggest is you keep the skin. If you want to skin it, you can. Cut it into sections like little steaks. You can leave the bones in. But you can bone it as well. But you want it to be about an inch and a half or maybe even 2 inches thick. And the thing I'm going to tell you is the one way our family used to eat it occasionally, and then, you know, this is sort of the Italian way, but you can change the seasonings. You would put the eel in vinegar and a ton of garlic and some fresh herbs like sage or thyme, and you would let it sit for, you know, an hour or two.
Uh-huh.
And then you take it out, you pat the pieces dry, and you slowly pan fry them.
Oh, okay.
And I mean crispy. You can even dip them in flour or whatever.
Yeah.
And salt and pepper them. And you don't want to overcook them, as Ted said. You want them to be about 150.
Okay.
At most, or 145. And then, Ted, the way I've had them is that they're just served up hot, or sometimes they're actually put in a fresh vinegar marinade, and you can just tuck them in the fridge, and then you bring them out, and you can warm them up, or you can serve them at room temperature. Is this anything that you've seen?
That is not that specific dish, but I have to say that really speaks to me in terms of helping make Thanksgiving easier, is room temperature dishes, or things that don't consume real estate in your oven.
And they're pickled, and they're really delicious.
And pickled flavors, I think, are so welcome when everything else on the table is deeply savory,
yeah,
and rich and filling and brown, beige. You know, it's the holiday, yeah, of
and
beige
is,
food.
So, Madeline, that's one way to cook an eel.
All right. That sounds great to me. I'll try it out.
Hey, Madeline, happy Thanksgiving. And I think it's great you do an eel.
Great. Thank you so much.
You take care and have a great one. Yep.
That is super cool, and it's also kind of Portlandia-ish that someone from Portland, Oregon is doing. That, I mean, that's totally Portlandia. The only thing that would make that more Portlandia is if she was inquiring about, well, we need to know more about these eels. Like, how did they live?
So, okay, you've got the turkey in the oven, but what else is on the menu?
Well, I've got a potato gratin going. I love Brussels sprouts, and I found a recipe on Food Republic, Marcus Samuelson's site, for a very simple, it's from this book called Put an Egg on It, which also sounds like Portlandia.
Right.
It's just a simple saute of shaved Brussels sprouts that you then put in a baking dish and crack eggs onto them and finish that. And I've told you this year after year, so I don't mean to bore you, but I have to have a sage stuffing. I do mince up the turkey liver and put it in there for richness, and I don't tell anybody about it.
Right.
It's just a nice place to use that.
Are you an stuffing in the bird person or a stuffing outside of the bird person?
Outside the bird, definitely. There's not enough space in the bird it's delicious to do that, but it slows down the turkey, and there's not enough room in there to hold much stuffing anyway.
Yeah, I guess you're right. The design could have been improved on. What about dessert?
I am going to do the tiramisu of the South, which is the banana pudding with vanilla wafers in it.
That sounds great.
The classic recipe from the back of the box. And before anybody starts calling me a redneck or something, I would like to point out this recipe is a classic, true, genuine scratch custard with box cookies in it, just like tiramisu.
Right.
And I find it to be absolutely delicious with the meringue on the top. And this is a dish that my family's made my whole life, and it transports me instantly into my grandmother Allen's kitchen in Florida. So it's a special thing for me.
Oh, this sounds delicious. Ted, thanks for taking the time this morning. I don't want to take you away from that first waft of the turkey.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Ted, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Lynn. Always a pleasure. Have a great day.
You too. Okay.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. You can see Ted Allen each and every week on Chopped. Okay, let's get back to your questions. You can use Twitter, hashtag Turkey Confidential. Find us on Facebook. Send us an email, splendidtable.org, or call 800-537-5252. Where are the Hanukkah listeners? Come on, guys, call in. Let us know what's going on. You don't have to have a question. We love stories. We have Irene calling from Michigan. Irene, what's up? What do you want to talk about? I think Irene may not be there yet. Ah, it is Josh from Jacksonville, Tennessee. Hi, Josh. Sorry for the confusion, folks. We now have Irene back. Hey, Irene, it's Lynn. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Sorry for the confusion. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about?
Well, you mentioned before that gravy was one of the second most next to the turkey for your Thanksgiving table, and I'm a little stumped here this year because my turkey showed up without giblets, and I was really looking forward to making that gravy with all those giblets.
Okay, here's what you can do. Do you make a broth with them ahead of time?
I do have some stock available, and then I do have all those pan juices.
Okay. All right. This is the real key. Okay. This is what you're going to do. You take a skillet, you put a little oil in it. I like olive oil. You cut up, okay, coarsely chop even, some onion, a bit of celery, and some carrot, and throw a bay leaf in there, and you're going to slow brown those things.
Okay.
Okay. You're going to just get them nice and brown. And you can throw in some garlic if you want to. And I love the tomato paste trick, you know, a little tomato paste, because it's loaded with umami that lifts all the other flavors. And then what you're going to do is you're going to dump that into a saucepan, a sizable saucepan, and scrape in all the brown bits from it. And you're going to put your stock in there, and you're going to let that simmer while the turkey's in the oven. And I always throw wine into that, unless you'd prefer not to.
No, love to.
Pardon?
I love to.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so for like, you know, every couple of cups of stock, you want to have at least a half cup of a dry wine. And you let that simmer partially covered. You really want to concentrate it, but what's happening is those brown vegetables are going to take the place of some of the depth that the giblets give to the gravy.
Okay.
And then what you do is when it comes time to make the pan gravy, you just take a strainer and you pour through, you know, keep adding that to your pan juices until you get the gravy where you want it.
Okay.
Okay. So
sounds great.
Yeah, you know, when we don't have giblets, we still make, well, the equivalent, not lemonade,
thank
but, you know, have a great one.
You too. Thank you.
Okay, Irene. Bye. And it's Eileen, and my apologies. 800-537-5252 is how you can reach us. And you can also tweet us. Use the hashtag Turkey Confidential. Hobby is calling from Petaluma, California. Hobby, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Lynn, how are you this morning?
I am very good. And have I pronounced your name right?
It's Hobie. Just with a hard O. Hobie.
Hobie.
It's such an honor to talk to you. I love what you do so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So I'm doing my biggest dilemma. I'm a totally blind guy. I actually talked to you last year. One of my biggest dilemmas is when I'm doing a great Thanksgiving dinner is hors d'oeuvres. You know, what do you serve that's light and delicious? And what I've selected this year is a little bit of a smoked salmon. I got my hands on some absolutely, my partner and I got our hands on some absolutely incredible smoked salmon from that great place, smoked on hickory and cherry wood, and it's Alaskan king salmon, so it's very nice.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I've got some crostini that I handmade.
Right.
What I'm thinking about doing, tell me what you think of this. Heard rumors about recipes doing this, and I've seen variations of this in the past, but I'm doing a very light ricotta with a little bit of Meyer lemon zest and Meyer lemon juice. What
right.
do you think of that?
And you're doing that to go under the salmon?
Yes, correct. Between the salmon and the crostini will be that little bit of ricotta.
Oh, Hobie, that's fabulous. That's
think
fabulous.
That sounds good?
I think it does because the salmon loves the creaminess. Ricotta is really delicious. And that little bit of Meyer lemon has a sweet overtone, but it's still tart. And you would normally put that bit of lemon on the salmon anyway. And the kind of salmon that you're doing, which is a West Coast smoke, right,
yep.
is very intensely smoky.
Mm-hmm. And it's very wet.
Exactly. So the creaminess of that ricotta with the tart sweetness of the Meyer lemon, you're home free. Now, you did call last year, and you're blind. I'm really curious. How do you handle the turkey?
You know, anything, I just say anything's possible with enough strategy and hard work. And I've always been in the kitchen, so I'm here in Sonoma County in the wine country. And my greatest passion has been cooking and this sort of hyper-locality of food and wine. And
right.
I'm in college now. I'm a young guy, but I've cooked my whole life. And I love doing things methodically. I need to know my space. I need to know where things are.
Mm-hmm.
And the turkey's all done by smell. You can tell when that skin is, you can tell the difference between a very light brown and a tinge golden brown, which may be a 2 or 3 minute cooking time,
yeah.
simply by the aroma. It's really remarkable what you can do in your kitchen. Even sighted folks can use their noses a lot more than they thought they could. You know, when you're turned away doing other stuff, you might have 6 things going. You need to figure out what's going on around you.
Yeah, you know, one of the interesting things about that, you're reminding me of something a long time ago when I started teaching.
Yeah.
I had students cooking at different places. It was a participation class. And I had my back toward one team, and I said to them, your onions, your heat isn't high enough. The onions aren't cooking right. And they said, how did you know? And I said, I couldn't hear snapping. I couldn't hear the sounds
that's
that
right.
a quick sauté makes. And I guess it's that old thing about the focus changes, I would imagine.
Yeah.
When one sense isn't there, the focus of those other senses shift. And
it's so true. And the other thing that I do, Lynn, that I just want to mention to you is I work up at a vineyard part-time, and I host a completely blind wine tasting over a period of about 2.5 hours where we sit and taste wine under blindfold. And all these things that you're saying absolutely come true to the sighted audience who participate in that wine tasting.
Oh, God. Are these open to the public?
They're totally open to the public, but I'd love to come on the show sometime and talk with you about it.
You know what? We're going to try to make that happen, but I want to come to one.
Well, I want you at one, Lynn. That'd be wonderful.
I would love it because...
Okay, so Yeah, that is really wonderful, and I would love to talk to you more about that and get on your show at some point, because I just, what can I say? The Splendid Table is a dream come true.
Oh, thank you. And I'll let you get back to the turkey and to everything else. But, Hobie, thank you, and have a wonderful holiday.
You too, Lynn.
Okay, bye.
Take good care. Bye-bye.
You too. You know, this idea, listen. If you have doubt, trust your nose and listen. And it's going to be amazing. Even if you've never cooked, you can smell when something's starting to go over to the burn. You know, it's not hard. 800-537-5252. We have got Lou calling from Washington, D.C. Lou, what do you want to talk about?
Lynn, first of all, a very happy Thanksgiving to you. Love the show.
Thank you, and to you.
Thank you. So here's the deal. So I'm Jewish, and as you know, today we're celebrating Hanukkah now.
Right.
And obviously, I want to talk about brisket.
Now you're talking. All right.
I hope you're getting ready to do a lot of talking, because I need help with my brisket.
Okay. So. Have you ever done it before?
Well, I have. So can I give a little bit of backstory?
Sure, absolutely. We love backstory.
Okay, good. So here's the deal. So, and I hope my mother is not listening, because I really look to my mother-in-law for brisket.
Oh.
And the way that she makes it, she boils it, right? And, you know, it's not a very fancy recipe. It's like, you know, you boil the brisket, and then you add some of the Lipton's onion soup mix, some tomato paste, maybe some onions and garlic in there, and at some point, you know.
That's an old and noble approach.
Well, thank you. The problem that I have is that I typically get my briskets from like a Costco or something, you know, a 3 or 4 pound brisket.
Right.
And sometimes I'll get two of them and throw them in the stock pot and try and cook it all together. For the past 3 or 4 years, whenever I make brisket, it's, you know, and I've made it once really, really decently. But for the past 3 or 4 years, I don't know what is going on. In fact, I've almost gone up to Costco to blame them for selling me bad meat, because what happens is at some point, you know, after I'm done cooking, I bring it out, and basically the meat just gets hard. It's not tender. It doesn't hold the flavor of the broth that I'm cooking in. And I'm wondering, what am I doing wrong? Is it because I'm boiling it too hard? Am I not boiling it long enough? Mm. I really just don't know how to fix the problem, and I would definitely appreciate any advice you have about that.
Lou, you've already fixed the problem. It's the first thing. It's boiling too hard. It's the weirdest thing that when you cook meat too fast, especially, you know, meat like brisket, which tends to be lean, there's that one great area on the thick end, you know, where it has layers of fat. That's
sure.
My side of the brisket, by the way. But but here's the deal. Believe it or not, even in a stew, meat can end up being dry. Even cooked in stock, it can end up being dry. Here's what you want to do.
Okay.
You want to cook that so that there is barely a bubble in the liquid. You can count to five before a bubble goes up to that surface and blips on you. And the other thing is, you don't want to take the meat. Use an instant reading thermometer, okay?
Uh-huh.
And if you don't have that, you want the meat to be about 160 at the center. Now, worst mm-hmm. comes to worst, you can cut into it, and it may still be a little bit pink.
Mm-hmm.
It would be okay if it's a little bit pink, because you're going to pull that out. Now, are you doing this all today?
No. I'm thinking about doing it this weekend, though.
Okay. But the idea is, when you pull that out, you can let that cool a bit. And then the rest of the cooking is just essentially to make that sauce and perhaps glaze it. So if you want to undercook it a bit, you can. You can take it to like 150. But you don't want to ever let that meat get above 160 at its heart.
Okay.
Ever. Even in the finishing, okay?
Tell me if this makes sense to you, because the way I've been taught to do that by my mother-in-law, who is a very good cook, is you boil the briskets. Basically, you put them in the stock pot, water about an inch above
where
the briskets are, and then you boil them for an hour. And I'm guessing you would say to boil them at this sort of lower temperature as well.
Yeah, it's going to take longer. The slower you cook them, the more juicy and tender they're going to be, and you don't want to overcook them.
No. Here's the thing, is that she says after the first hour, you take it out, then slice it, then throw it back in and finish cooking it.
Don't do it. It's going to dry
it
out. No, it's going to dry it. And, you know, meat, one of the other problems is meat is leaner now than when she was making that recipe years ago. And not to insult her at all, but, you know, it used to be meat had marbling. So I think that's going to work for you. And, by the way, have a very happy Hanukkah and a great Thanksgiving.
You too. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
I'd love to know if anybody's going to be serving brisket today instead of the turkey or along with the turkey. 800-537-5252. That's how you can reach us. We have Varsha calling, and Varsha's in Austin. Varsha, what's on your mind?
Hi, Lynn. Happy Thanksgiving. And this is my yearly tradition. I always go to my childhood friend, and we celebrate Thanksgiving together every year. And on my way from Richardson to Austin, I always call your show, and you're so gracious. Your team is so gracious that you put me on the call every year.
Oh, Varsha, of course. And I remember your first call had us in tears. You were saying joy it was to be living in the United States and being able to celebrate this holiday.
We were
melting away.
I'm a proud Indian American, and I celebrate this festival with all pomp and joy. And I wanted to share one recipe that I dedicate to both the countries, the country from where I am, India, and my new home, that is America.
Oh, this is great.
This is a recipe, which is a pumpkin soup recipe, which everybody knows how to make a pumpkin soup. But the spices that I add to this are both have Indian and American origin. So I mix dried onion flakes with oregano. And I add dried fenugreek leaves along with fennel seed. The fenugreek and fennel, we make a lot of curries with pumpkin, and we add this spice to it. So, and we onion is the common ingredient, but the other ingredients that you can add from any spaghetti seasoning or pizza seasoning, you can mix that. But add fenugreek, dried fenugreek, about a tablespoon, and about fennel seeds, about a tablespoon. And saute all of this in olive oil, and put your chicken broth or vegetable broth, and let this simmer for about 10-15 minutes. Strain everything, and then add it to your basic pumpkin soup. And it will give you a fabulous flavor.
Oh, this sounds fabulous. And you get that sweetness from the fennel, and then the fenugreek has that I want to say it's not funky, but it's this deep sort of mysterious flavor to it.
Yes, and the dried fenugreek leaves you will always get at the Indian grocery stores. It is called kasuri methi.
Kasuri methi.
Yes.
All right. Hey, Varsha, thank you. Thank you very
much. Thank you
much.
So much, Lynn.
We will talk to you next year. And in the meantime, you have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful holiday.
You too, ma'am.
Okay.
Love your show.
Oh, thank you. It wouldn't be Thanksgiving without Varsha calling in. It really wouldn't. Hey, you can find us on Facebook, and you can tweet us. Use hashtag Turkey Confidential. And someone tweeted us. It was the Electric Chef. And this is what the Electric Chef says. Dinner is in the break room at work. We're deep frying quail. What's a great side that can be cooked in an electric gadget? An electric skillet, a bit of butter or oil. Okay. You want some cinnamon sticks if you've got them. And if you haven't got them, any kind of herb. Thin sliced carrots and a little bit of broth, and then black pepper and lemon zest, if you can get your hands on it, okay? And then what you do is you're going to just add a little water to that or a little broth, and you're going to cover it, and you're going to cook it slow, 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 slow. And the idea originated with Paula Wolfert, with a wonderful Eastern Mediterranean recipe that had olives thrown in at the end, which, by the way, would not hurt. I hope Paula will forgive me for taking liberties. 800-537-5252. You can send us a email. Go to splendidtable.org. We have Liz calling from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Liz, what's up?
Hi. So I got my turkey out today, and I hadn't actually seen it yet because my dad delivered it to my house. And the legs and the breast were all bruised. And I'd never seen a fresh turkey looking like that before. Mm. I looked it up online, and basically every site told me don't eat it. So I had them take it back to the grocery store. It's a high-end grocery store.
Right.
And they tried to tell us that, oh, it's due to the way it was packaged and oxidation, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I actually said, don't bring another one home. And we luckily found another one. But have you ever seen that before? I'd never seen that.
I've seen it, and you're right, you shouldn't eat it. If nothing else, the bird may be fine. But the idea that someone would be selling a bird in that condition, because that's a reject, essentially. You know, when it comes to birds that are grown commercially, that's a reject. It would never go into, you know, the plastic bag or whatever and be sold. And if you're doing that at a high-end grocery store and they're handing you that twaddle, pardon me, there's another word for it, that's complete nonsense. You know,
that is, yeah, and it's actually I won't say the name of the brand, but it's a high-end organic brand, and they try to tell me that every single one they got from them was like that. And I'm like, then why did you accept them?
Exactly. And somebody, you know, something must have happened. Maybe that brand has perfectly fine turkeys, but maybe something happened. Things fell. Somebody played football with it. Who knows? But I'm glad you got a better turkey. And, you know, it's that old business. When they pay us to accept something, fine. But as long as we're paying for our food, it should be what we expect. And I will get off my soapbox right now.
Well, thank you very much. I just knew this was wrong. And so I'm glad that I sent my dad over to another store, and they had a lovely one, fresh one, waiting for us. So.
Good for you. And
yeah.
And may you all enjoy it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Take care. You can reach us at 800-537-5252. Lily is on the line from Tampa, Florida. Lily, what do you want to talk about?
Cranberry sauce.
Ah, and what is happening with your cranberry sauce?
Well, every year I do my cranberry sauce, and everybody have to talk about it. But last night I think I was too tired, and I put in too much cayenne pepper. I don't know how to.
Oh, okay, okay, and you want to know what to do about it?
Yes, how, because it's a little spicy.
Yeah.
Too much spicy than normal.
First of all, it sounds utterly delicious to me. I would love it. But here's the deal. You know, there are three things that work to calm down heat, okay?
Uh-huh.
The first thing is fat.
Okay.
Because the heat, the chemical that makes that heat is actually soluble in fat.
Okay.
Meaning it disperses. So if you have cream, if you have any kind of really good, like butter, you know, good tasting fat of some sort, if you want to serve it warm, you could cook a little bacon and bacon fat and a little onion or whatever and stir that in and just serve that at room temperature or a little warm so the fat doesn't congeal. That will help. Cream could help, and it could just be poured in and, you know, stirred. It could be quite delicious. Sour cream, fabulous.
Sour cream, okay.
Right. Now, the other choice that you would have in a case like this would be to think about the countries that have super hot food. And one of the things that comes to mind is Southeast Asia, and that's where you find a lot of sweet sour, like fresh lemon or fresh lime, and then you would have brown sugar in there. Or something that's sweet, agave syrup, anything. But something that turns your cranberry sauce, it's still delicious, but it becomes sweet sour because both the sugar and the acid, whatever it may be, and it could even be vinegar, will take down the heat.
Okay, but I did put in already, they got a cup of sugar. I put in more sugar on it.
Okay, then I would go the cream route. I would go any of the dairy products. Okay.
Yeah, because if I put in too much sugar, it's going to be too sweet.
Yes, exactly.
Sweet hot.
Yeah. Well, now you could add a little bit of lemon, but I would just throw in the sour cream or something that's really, really creamy.
Okay. And how much?
Do it to taste. Keep adding and tasting, keep adding and tasting and adding and tasting.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
You are welcome. Hey, it's you have a great holiday and great cranberry sauce.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And happy Thanksgiving and happy Hanukkah to everybody. Now, be sure to visit our website, splendidtable.org, for information on anything you heard here today, including on our newest ebook, Eating in Italian Holidays. You're listening to The Splendid Table's annual culinary call-in program, Turkey Confidential, from APM, American Public Media. Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper with Turkey Confidential, the Splendid Tables nationwide Thanksgiving Day call-in show brought to you by APM, American Public Media, and by the employee owners of Bob's Red Mill Natural Foods, stone millers of over 400 whole grain flours, hot cereals, and baking mixes. Bob'sRedMill.com, whole grain foods for every meal of the day. Well, happy Thanksgiving and happy Hanukkah, everybody. Now, if you've not tuned in before, let me tell you what's going on. We're here live and primed for questions and story swapping. Your most hilarious turkey day, the Hanukkah everyone would rather forget, or maybe the one that you'll always remember. Well, there are lots of ways that you can get to us. You can pick up the phone, 800-537-5252. You can connect with us on Facebook or Twitter. Use hashtag Turkey Confidential. We also want to see what your Thanksgiving table looks like. So share your photos with us on Instagram. Well, not only are we talking with you this hour, we're talking to best-selling author Michael Pollan and Patty Hinnich of PBS's Patty's Mexican Table. But first, we have Iron Chef Alex Guanichelli of the Food Network with us. Alex, it's good to have you with us. Alex? Hey, Alex, are you there? I think we've got some phone problems with Alex. So, okay, let's get to the calls. 800-537-5252. You can send us an email. Go to splendidtable.org. You can find us on Twitter. Use hashtag Turkey Confidential. And, of course, we're on Facebook. Oh, I have got Facebook. Sarah says, the butcher left the feet, head, and the eyeballs on the turkey. Yikes. What should I do? The children are terrified. Okay, this is a very familiar experience to me, unfortunately. All right, here's what you're going to do. Get the kids out of the room, first of all. You know, put a tape in the TV. But what you're going to do is, it's really quite easy. You're going to cut off the feet, and you're going to go to, look where the drumstick is. Okay, just below that joint is where, you know, that's where the feet begin. You're going to twist that a little bit, and you're going to take a knife, and you're going to cut and find that space between that joint. It's very easy, and the feet are done. Now, I will tell you those feet are really wonderful in broth, but you don't have to think about that. Now, the head, take the neck, okay, use a sharp knife, and cut it off close to the body. Just keep sawing, and if you want to, twist a little bit. Some deep breaths might be necessary. I know it's a little bit weird, but you can take that off, and again, you can discard it, although a lot of people love to use it. So that should have your turkey ready, and nobody's going to be scared. And just think about this. Your turkey is probably as fresh can be. And have a great holiday, Sarah. 800-537-5252. We've got Jessica calling, and she's on a boat on the Potomac River. So, Jessica, cooking, relaxing, or just getting away from it all?
A little bit of all three of those, Lynn. Thanks so much for taking my call. That's true. We are on a trawler in the Potomac River with several friends and neighbors out of Washington, D.C.
It sounds like, are you guys going to be cooking on the boat?
We are going to be cooking on the boat. We have an oilless fryer. I guess it's run by propane. It's kind of a thing you like drop the turkey into, but it's not like deep frying. There's no oil. It's just the heat inside. So we're going to make a turkey on that. We're actually having a full Thanksgiving dinner here on our neighbor's 44-foot trawler, the motor vessel Tarkeel.
Sounds fabulous. So anything that's coming out of the river itself or out of the bay?
No, unfortunately, just an turkey, a land-dwelling entree for us today. But we did have a question.
Sure.
Because I don't know if you've seen on the internet lately, there's been a picture kind of making the rounds of a turkey that was cooked in kind of like a woven blanket of bacon.
And so Yeah,
we wanted to do that, but there's not a lot of, you know, there weren't any instructions with the pictures. So we have all the bacon, and we have the turkey, of course. But we wanted to make sure, you know, that we were cooking the meat properly. And
I would, you know, either... this is what I would do, okay? I would dry fry, do the turkey, the way you're doing the turkey. And then have either with a big skillet or with in the oven on a pan, weave the strips of bacon And, you know what they look like, right? It's mm-hmm. in, out, okay? Mm-hmm. And this will keep, with a glass of wine, you can make this happen so easily and just hang there, enjoy yourself out there. But the idea is cook it separately. And then when the turkey's all cut up on the platter, lay that across it. And you could even do, depending on the size of the turkey, you could do two of them. And because what you're going to end up with, it's like a blanket. And that crispness, as you start picking up your piece of turkey from the platter and serving yourself, you can hack off a piece of bacon, the bacon blanket to go with it. And it's crisp and it's really, really fabulous. And if you want to get really sexy about it, as you're cooking it, you can sprinkle it with a bit of brown sugar and a little bit of chili powder. And let that caramelize, very sexy. Always drain it, on paper towels or whatever you've got so that it's not greasy. But then that goes on top of the turkey. It'll be fabulous.
All right, that sounds great. We'll definitely give that a shot.
I'm glad you like it. I like enthusiasm. Hey, you guys enjoy, I have to say I envy you. I wish we lived near, we do. We have the Mississippi. Trouble is, the ice is forming for us. Hey,
come on out and visit us, and we'll take you for a cruise. Come on out and visit us in Washington, D.C.
You've got it. Take care. Bye.
All right, thanks so much. Have a good Thanksgiving.
You too. That blanket, by the way, the bacon blanket, it is something, it's quite easy. When the turkey's breast up, you weave that blanket. And what I like to do is kind of interlace it so it's wider than just the width of the bacon. And then I can loop it over the wings. So it's like a little vest, and it doesn't shift around as the turkey roasts away. But take it off to brown the skin on the breast before you, take it out of the oven. So anyway. Great fun. We have Liz on the phone from Alabama. Liz, what do you want to talk about? Oops, Liz is just looked at the note. We have a very sophisticated system here in the control room. Notes are pasted up on the window between me and the control room. It's highly sophisticated, terribly technical, and I didn't see it was coming from Facebook. So Liz is in Alabama, and she wants to know how to make her gravy more exciting. Okay, Liz, first of all, for me, if it doesn't have wine boiled down in it, it's just not happening. But if wine is not your thing or alcohol, do a little bit of apple cider. But then why not add some interesting herbs or spices? Like, for instance, okay, why not do a mixture of a bit of hot chili powder, but mix it with oregano, some chopped garlic, salt and pepper, and maybe a little cumin and coriander. Now you're in the Southwest, okay? And when you get those pan juices, you get the turkey out of the oven, you got the pan juices, and you're going to start boiling them down, throw that mixture in and let it cook. So whatever you're going to season with, just do that so it gets cooked. You could do Moroccan style. That would be sweet or hot paprika. Sweet paprika is great. Cinnamon, and again, cumin, coriander. And if you want, you could even throw in a lot of garlic. And if you've got fresh coriander or fresh basil or fresh mint, that can go in. And you saute that in, and then you start adding the broth. So that should take you, over the hump. The other thing is, make the plain pan gravy or bake it however you normally do. Stir in some really strong mustard at the end, and then at the very end, stir in cream or sour cream. You're home free. You can reach us, go to Facebook, tweet us at Twitter. Use the hashtag Turkey Confidential. And you can call us 800-537-5252. We've got Laura calling from College Station, Texas. Laura, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Hi, Lynn. Thank you for taking my call.
You are welcome.
First of all, I just wanted to say that I'm an obstetrician, but I am so glad that I'm not having to dismantle a turkey like one of the Facebook questions.
I have to tell you, one of my favorite students in the days when I was teaching, and I was teaching how to bone out everything in sight, he was a surgeon, and he went out to his car and came in with his kit.
You would think that wouldn't be a problem, but it makes me squeamish.
I hear you, it's kind of reassuring to hear that from an obstetrician. So what are you thinking about?
I am on my way to College Station, where my parents live, which is Aggieland, and my family is scattered this year from Maryland to Australia. So it's just going to be me and my parents and my aunt. So just four of us. So we've discarded the turkey idea, and we're doing filet mignon. And my contribution to dinner is potatoes. So I chose a recipe for twice-baked potatoes with roasted fennel and fontina to go in the potatoes. But I've never cooked with fennel before, and I know you said your passion is to make people's mouths water. So I was hoping that's what you could help me do with the fennel.
Okay, so, okay, this is what you want to do, because fennel tastes like anise, all right?
Okay.
And so what I would do, remind me, I got a little bit distracted, fresh fennel or fennel seed?
Fresh fennel.
Ah.
Cut up into wedges and sort of roasted while the potatoes bake.
Oh, that's going to be so good. I would do a little bit of grated orange rind on the fennel.
Okay.
And you know what wouldn't hurt either? Grated orange rind, a little bit of white wine, and a tad of butter. So
okay.
You
it
get...
does say for olive oil and a dry white wine. I chose Sauvignon Blanc.
Oh, that's fine. It could do olive oil, but I would do a bit of the orange, grated orange rind, because fennel kind of, there's an aspect of fennel that echoes orange, and it's going to be wonderful with the potatoes.
Okay, great.
So I think you're home free.
It says to cover it. Should I still expect it to brown?
Well, you want it to brown when you uncover it, but one of the reasons they want to cover it is it takes time to cook it. To get it tender. So you cover it until it's pretty tender, and then you uncover it. And if you need to really brown it fast, turn on the broiler and just watch it closely.
Okay, great.
But I would say when you can put a knife in it relatively easily, that's time to pull off the cover.
Okay, good.
And you're home free.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Hey, have a great holiday.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. You can reach us at 800-537-5252. Check us out on Facebook. Tweet us, use the hashtag Turkey Confidential, and send us an email, splendidtable.org. Okay, we have got Lauren calling. No, we've got Susan from Vermont. Susan,
hi.
What's up? What do you want to talk about?
Oh, I'm so glad you took the call.
oh, God, what's going on?
Well, my husband and I are having Thanksgiving, just the two of us, and we have an incredible gift of wild turkey legs and backs that are all nicely thawed and ready to go. There's no skin on them.
Right.
Our oven is broken, but I do have a Dutch oven. I mean, a cooker for the, something. And I have some wild apple juice that we've got, and I've got turnips and carrots and every root vegetable, and I don't know what to do with the thing.
Okay. So you've got a Dutch oven. How big is it?
It's not big. It's like 7.5 quarts.
Okay. And you've got, the turkey is?
It's wild turkey, so it's, I know it'll fit in there, but it's going to, it's...
It's going to be tight.
It's going to be tight, yeah.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Okay, here's what you're going to do. You're going to do a little browning of some onion and some, if you've got a little bacon or anything like that, okay? And a bit of garlic. Celery, carrot, onion is a classic base for this.
Uh-huh.
And before that, though, you're going to take a little oil in the bottom of the Dutch oven, or better yet, in a skillet, and you're going to slow brown that wild turkey.
Even though it doesn't have any skin.
Oh, it does. That's right. It doesn't have any skin, does it? No. All right. A little bit of brown. Just a teeny bit of brown.
Okay.
Because you want to get the caramelization. Then you're going to brown the vegetables. You're going to put them all together. You're going to add wine so it comes about a quarter of the way up the side of the turkey. Add whatever.
One fourth of the way up the turkey?
About one fourth the way up the side of the turkey. And then you're going to add some broth. All right? Or whatever else you have handy.
Can I use that apple cider? Is that going to be too strong?
No, the apple cider will be gorgeous. I think it'll be wonderful. Add seasonings, whatever you like. And you could even add a teeny bit of vinegar for sweet sour, right? And you're going to slowly, slowly cook that baby. But you're going to keep it at the barest bubble. You can count to five between each bubble. And you want to get it to about 160 internal temperature at the breast. All right? And then you're going to pull it out, and you're going to just let it rest a little bit, and you are going to serve it. And if you want to, you could serve it with a little bit of, sautéed corn or something creamy. You may even want to do spinach with just a cheese with it, something that's going to be delicious as a side dish. Whatever you were originally planning is going to probably work brilliantly.
We're going to have cornbread and...
Oh, this will be gorgeous. It's going to be perfect. Do not worry. In fact, I think this may be even better than roasting it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, really.
Easier, too.
Easier. Much easier. Absolutely. Look, I had an oven that broke in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, we did something similar, except we had to give up half the bird because it was 20 pounds, which was so dumb on my part to get a 20-pound turkey. But at any rate, I think that's going to really give you a wonderful meal.
Thank you so much.
Okay, remember, out of adversity comes triumph.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much.
Okay. You're welcome. 800-537-5252. And you can also send us an email. Go to splendidtable.org. We've got Corrine calling from Michigan. Corrine, you have a question, a story.
I do. Yes, I'm having a pumpkin pie emergency, and I'm hoping you can help me.
All right. Pumpkin pie emergencies have happened fairly frequently in our kitchen, so let's see if
okay,
I can help.
Good.
Okay, okay.
Good, good. So my daughter is helping me cook. My kids are helping, and she was helping with the pumpkin pie. We opened the can of evaporated milk, which was 12 ounces, and it went right into the bowl. Then I read the actual recipe, which said 8 ounces. So right now we have the pumpkin and too much evaporated milk, and I'm trying to figure out how to bring it back around.
Okay. Okay. Do you have any more pumpkin?
I do not. That is my problem.
Yeah,
it was
because you could just make it up.
15 ounces of pumpkin, and then it was supposed to be 8 ounces of the milk and 2 eggs.
And you did... And you did one, another, you did 12 ounces.
Yes. I have
eggs. Yolks. Egg yolks are going to make it up. How many eggs go into it?
It's calling for 2 eggs.
Okay. You're going to do 2 eggs and you're going to do 3 egg yolks.
2 eggs plus 3 egg yolks.
Yeah, because the idea is that's going to help make the custard thicker.
Because
you're really baking, when you're doing pumpkin pie, you're making a custard in a crust.
That's
basically
fantastic.
It. Yeah. So more eggs and you're home free.
Okay, good. She'll be so happy. She was a little crestfallen. So now
I can
gonna...
understand. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't be crestfallen?
All right.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You are more than welcome. Have a great one.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And you too.
Bye-bye.
Remember, you can tweet us. Use the hashtag TurkeyConfidential. And you can also find us on Facebook. Now, we have got from Twitter, we've got Megan, and Megan is saying, I'm in Michigan. I love maple syrup and recipes. How can I use it not just in pureed sweet potatoes? Ah, okay. Shredded cabbage. If you've got some cabbage in the house, just put it through the food processor. Do a fine shred. Saute it with some onion, you know, and throw in, if you've got it, poppy seeds. Okay, but you want to saute it with something that has a little bit of spice to it. You know, a few whole cloves will go a long way. And then what you're going to do is you're going to take the cabbage out of the pan, and in that same pan, you're going to put about a cup of maple syrup, and you're going to put about a half a cup of vinegar or a little more, and you're going to simmer that down until it's quite syrupy, and you're going to taste it, and it should be kind of tart, but you still get all that maple flavor, and you toss that with your cabbage, and you can serve it at room temperature, or you can serve it hot, and the problem's solved. And if you don't have any cabbage, shred carrots, or even broccoli stems, believe it or not, are great this way, and cauliflower is dynamite. So there's your answer. What to do with maple syrup that is not about sweet potatoes? We've got Greg on the phone from Louisville, Kentucky. Greg, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I've been smoking my turkey, and it is done hours before I had anticipated it being complete. Breast's internal temperature is...
Greg, I'm having trouble getting you because you're on speakerphone. Can you get off the speaker?
Hey, just is that better?
That's much better. Okay.
Great.
All right. So what temperature is it at now?
The breast meat is about 163 degrees.
Aha. Uh-huh. And so you have a done turkey.
I have a done turkey.
Then get it out of that smoker.
Okay.
Yeah. And what do I do since my guests are not coming for about 3 hours?
I would say, first of all, I don't think you want it sitting around for 3 hours. I think you want to chill it down. And then what you'll do is, do you have room in the oven?
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to gently warm it about 325. Okay. You can leave it out for an hour or so. But, you know, when it's 3 hours, I always get a little iffy about it. So
right.
You've got to get it in the fridge and then pull it out. And if you want to, you know how you're going to warm it up more quickly? Butterfly it. And when you butterfly it, I mean, you can put it out butterflied, and you can slice it and reconstruct the butterfly turkey on a platter. Very sexy stuff.
Okay, cool. thank you.
No, I know, because, you know, this is how I ended up with a turkey that fell apart in the oven. It was getting done too quickly, so I kept turning down the heat and turning down the heat, and we kept drinking wine in the living room, and... Let me put it this way. It was really done.
Seriously. Okay, so I'm going to let it rest for a little bit, cool it down,
and then
reheat it.
And you know what? It's going to be succulent.
Awesome.
Love that word. Hey, may you have a fabulous smoking turkey day.
All right, dear. Thank you for your help.
You take care. Bye. You can send us an email at splendidtable.org. But we've got Scott calling from Ely, Minnesota. Scott, I gather you may have a thought, a story, or do you have a question?
I have a debate that I'm hoping you can help us settle.
Oh, I love this. Is it between you and a loved one?
No, it's actually between me and some folks I work with.
Oh, this is even touchier. I love it. Okay.
Yeah. I like to have my job by the time this is over.
Okay. Yes.
Actually, we're in the middle of one of our favorite Thanksgiving traditions, which is listening to your show.
Oh, thank you.
So, anyway, the debate is this. We, in our house, we use a time-tested recipe that came from a magazine in 1959. So it's been around a while, and we cook the filling in the turkey.
Right.
And we do something that's a little bit different, at least that folks around here haven't heard of. We put it in, and it cooks overnight at a very low temperature, about 275, and it goes about 7 hours, the one from last night.
Right.
And then we just brown it the next day.
Uh-huh.
The debate is, how safe is it to cook the stuffing in the turkey?
Well, there's no problem in cooking the stuffing in the turkey. Does the stuffing have raw meat in it?
No, it does. Well, bacon, that's been cooked. No, it isn't raw.
All right, so no raw meat. Okay, no problem cooking the stuffing in the turkey, but there is a problem in having the turkey with the stuffing inside of it at that low temperature for that amount of time.
Okay.
Has anybody in the family gotten a little, you know, kind of...
Never.
Never.
No,
okay.
You've got
strong genes. I have to tell you. I've heard this method is, you're right. I mean, it's been used for a long, long time. But as the food police,
okay,
and being on air, you know, the way I'm on air, I have to say it's very tricky because harmful bacteria grows between 40 degrees Fahrenheit and 140 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay.
When you're cooking a turkey really slow that way at that low a temperature and you've got stuffing on the inside of it and the stuffing has bread in it, right, which grows lovely bacteria, you are holding that bird in that dangerous, you know, span of temperature for a very long time. And you're taking a big chance. Now, I don't want this to mean that everybody refuses to come to your house on Thanksgiving. But I have to tell you, that's the way it works scientifically. And I've heard so many people say nobody's ever gotten sick, and I'm very glad of that. But that's the science that's behind it. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Even when to brown it, when we reheat it, it goes about another hour?
That helps, but the damage is done.
Oh.
Yeah, because you see, the one thing is when first of all, even if the turkey didn't have stuffing in it, it's tricky to do it that way. But with the stuffing inside, it takes so long for the heat to get inside that stuffing. And it's so long that stuffing is between 40 and 140 degrees. You're just asking for trouble.
Okay,
and I'm sorry.
That's all right. We appreciate it. We love your show.
Well, thank you. And I hope you'll continue listening.
Oh, no, we will. Don't worry about that.
All right.
Thanks much. Have a good Thanksgiving.
And I hope you do, too.
Oh, we will.
Okay.
Take care.
You too. You too. It is a running problem. And it's also, you know, another note from the food police. If the turkey is defrosted on the counter all night, there are a lot of markets open that have turkey breasts available, and they cook fairly quickly, and you can butterfly them or whatever, and they can cook even more quickly, but you don't want to eat the bird. Okay, enough, enough. You can reach us. You can tweet us. Go and use hashtag Turkey Confidential. Call us, 800-537-5252. Ashley is calling from Maryland. Ashley, what's up?
Well, I want to say, first of all, thank you for having me on your show.
You are welcome.
Second, I am not a cook, and I thought that I would make this wonderful little recipe I found in the kids' section of the newspaper, sent in by, like, someone who's, like, 8 years old. And,
yeah, okay.
You know, like, disaster waiting to happen, right? So
I like your courage. I really like your courage. I think it's great.
So it's angel food cake, and you cut up some strawberries and throw it in there, and you put in, like, a package of strawberry Jell-O.
Right.
So... okay, I used 3 round pans full of this angel food cake that burned on the bottom and ended up being like an inch high.
Oh, dear.
So I was like, oh, my goodness, I have a disaster on my hands, and I have to have something for 3 o'clock. So I thought, well, what would Lynn do?
So okay.
What I did, well, no, I think I turned it around, and I wanted to share.
Oh, share, please.
So I took the... all the burnt parts off, and I ended up with something like about half an inch. So I've got 3 half an inch thick pancakes of this pink angel food cake.
Okay.
So what I'm doing is taking a pizza cutter, cutting them into like 1-inch squares, putting whipped cream in the middle and stacking them like maybe 3 high. And then I'm going to put a few berries on top. Do you think that will go over?
I think that's fabulous. I think that's fabulous. You know, essentially, you're making a sort of trifle.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, kind of. Paint a picture for me again. Now, whipped cream is going where?
Okay, well, the plan was that I was going to put whipped cream on the whole thing as the icing and, you know, put berries, you know.
Right, right.
Like a nice little pattern. So now they're a little, very maybe a 1/4 inch tall. Because when I use the slicer, it smashes the angel food cake.
Right.
So 1/4 inch tall, 1-inch square pieces, and I'm putting a little whipped cream in between each layer. And so I've got about 3, and then I'm covering the whole thing in whipped cream, and I'm probably going to put like 1 blueberry on top because they're so small.
Hey, I think that's going to be great. And, you know, if you've got any cocoa and powdered sugar around, you can combine that in a sifter or in a little, you know, a strainer, and you can kind of go shh, 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 shh over the top.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a super idea because it's very similar to what I was going to, you know, when at first I thought you were going to say, what can I do now? And I was going to say something very close to what you've just done.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And I'm not a cook at all. That makes me feel good.
Yeah, but you know what? This is the deal. You really are a cook because you're very smart.
Oh, well, thank you.
You are welcome. Hey, you all will right. be the star of the Thanksgiving table. Okay?
All right. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Great idea. You know, I think everybody should have something frozen, like angel food cake or a pound cake or whatever, in their freezer for those times, you know, when the pumpkin pie comes out as liquid, you pour it over the cake, you bake it some more, all of that kind of stuff. Well, we're going to be back with more of your calls and a little help from Michael Pollan and PBS's Patty Hinnich. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to a special Thanksgiving broadcast, Turkey Confidential, from APM, American Public Media.
Though you may not drive a great big Cadillac, against the white walls, TV antennas in the back, you may not have a car. Brothers and sisters, you can still stand tall. Just be thankful for what you got. Though you may not drive
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper with Turkey Confidential from The Splendid Table and American Public Media. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody, and happy Hanukkah. Well, today it's kitchen help for cooks and non-cooks alike all across the nation. Between Hanukkah and Thanksgiving, kitchens are just going nuts. So give us a call. Our lines are open for you, 800-537-5252. Now, if you can't get through, get to us on Facebook or tweet us a question using hashtag Turkey Confidential. And oh, by the way, share your photos with us on Instagram. Okay, let's get going with our next guest. It is journalist and best-selling author Michael Pollan. Michael, happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Lynn. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
So what's happening?
Well, I am at my mom and dad's house in Connecticut, where, as we do every year, we're all cooking together. My mom and my sisters, my three sisters, all participate. And in the last couple of years, I've had the same job, which has been, we have a big crowd. We have like 21 people,
right?
My siblings,
right,
and their kids and my parents. And so we need two turkeys. And one of them for the last couple of years has been a heritage turkey. And this year it's a bourbon red. And these turkeys are delicious, but take a little bit more care than just roasting. So what I've done the last couple of years is braise it, which means taking off the thighs and legs and cooking that separately in, mm-hmm, in a traditional kind, mm-hmm, of French braise with a mirepoix and some chicken stock. But it comes out delicious, even though it doesn't make a very nice presentation.
Yeah, but, you know, if you fooled around with heritage turkeys, you realize there's less meat to bone, but the meat is very richly flavored. It's probably a great idea.
Well, it's the only way to cook it, I think, with the heritage turkeys. And I think the result, I mean, if you've ever had braised turkey legs, they're amazing. I mean, the meat is really silky and richly flavored.
And you get the real flavor of the meat that way,
too. Exactly. You just don't get that Norman Rockwell moment.
You know, I can't resist, because of all that you've written, do you have any sort of personal relationship with this bird?
Well, the first time I got a heritage turkey, it was from a farmer in upstate New York, and I did go visit it. The bird we're going to have this evening came from Stone Barns, the farm that Dan Barber
operated. Oh, yes, the Rockefeller Project.
Yeah, and they grow beautiful meat there. And so that's where we got this one. So, I can picture where it grew up.
Right.
I've been on that property several times. But I can't say I've made the acquaintance.
Okay. Oh, well, I just had a no. So what else is going to be on your table?
Let's see. Another standby is Brussels sprouts that are kind of cut in half and then cooked on a cookie sheet with pignoli nuts. And they get kind of caramelized and browned on the bottom. It's really good. Judith, my wife, makes that. My mom, her absolute favorite is pureed turnips. She's often the only one who eats them in any quantity. But
they can be fabulous.
I think they're great, but it's not one of those kid-friendly foods. But they're really creamy. I have no idea how much butter and cream she puts in, but I suspect quite a bit. She's never been afraid of butter and cream.
Like your mother a lot.
And then one of my brothers-in-law is Canadian, and a traditional Thanksgiving food there, of course, is mashed potatoes. And so there will be mashed potatoes. And there is always some green, though. I think it's missing from too many Thanksgiving meals. So there'll be sautéed spinach or chard or kale. I don't know which. I didn't notice what they're working on. And then, of course, the cornbread stuffing, which is a favorite of mine, too. I have to say, this is my favorite holiday of the year. No religion, no politics, just really good food and family. So I look forward to this all year. Plus, it falls on a Thursday. I mean, what could be better?
Yeah, right. You get the weekend off.
Yeah.
May it be a wonderful one for you and your family. I can picture the kitchen with everybody buzzing around.
It's a lot of people in the kitchen, no question. But it works out pretty well. Everybody is a really devoted cook. There's, you know, there'll be spats over seasoning from time to time, but nothing serious.
Hey, have a wonderful day and
you
a
too,
wonderful
Lynn.
Evening and our best wishes to your family.
Happy holiday.
You too. Michael Pollan's latest book is Cooked, A Natural History of Transformation. Okay, it is back to just you and me and anything goes. Stories. I haven't heard any stories. Come on. Thanksgiving successes. Thanksgiving failures. Never failure. It's never a failure. It's a learning experience. You can call at 800-537-5252. Connect with us on Facebook. Tweet us. Use the hashtag Turkey Confidential or send us an email, splendidtable.org. Okay, we've got Matthew, and he's calling from Houston. Matthew, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Hi, I've got this great recipe for cranberry and pecan pie.
Right.
And I'd love to spice it up with some cardamom, but it's so easy to overdo cardamom, and I'm wondering if you have a rule set for how to use cardamom effectively.
I usually do this. You're doing a filling, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So start out with about a quarter teaspoon. Do you have the pods that you're going to get the seeds out of?
I have the pods, yeah. Should I put the whole pods in or should
no,
I?
No. What you want to do is open those pods, get the seeds out. You're going to have to crush them because you get a seed in your mouth and that's all you taste. Mm-hmm. And you can put them in a coffee grinder if you want to, or even a blender. You just want to break them up a little bit. A quarter of a teaspoon is what you start with, okay? Obviously grind up more. But start with a quarter of a teaspoon, stir it in. Know that it does blossom in flavor when it gets heated. And then add after that because it can take over. But you know, by the way, and this pie would take to it really nicely. Do you know what's an incredible combination? Cardamom with vanilla.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, it's fabulous. It's fabulous. And I've used it in apple pies for a long time, and it's really incredible. Usually for my average 9-inch to 10-inch pie, I might use a quarter to a half a teaspoon of cardamom, but I'm tasting and see if I want a little bit more. But you're really wise because a lot of people overdo it, and then all you get is cardamom.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what a fun thing is? It's often done at the end of an Indian meal, is to have those whole pods out on the table. And everybody can chew on them just to freshen your breath and make you feel like the world is in a right place and you're not overly full.
Oh, that's a lovely idea.
It's a really nice idea. So
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's going to work for you. And have a great one.
You too.
Okay.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, there's somebody I really want you to meet, especially considering that today we have Hanukkah and Thanksgiving. This year, our friend Patty Hinnich joins us, and she's in Washington, D.C. Now, Patty is the host of PBS's Patty's Mexican Table. Patty, hola and shalom.
Hola, Lynn. So nice to talk to you today.
It's good to talk to you, sweetie. So, okay, I have to know, you've got Hanukkah, you've got Thanksgiving. How many people have you got coming?
We're going to be close to 40, Lynn.
Oh, a mere bagatelle for you, right?
And I'm getting so many different requests. I'm running late just from trying to fit everybody in.
Well, thanks for taking, you know, for taking the time with us. But how?
No, I didn't mean from you. I mean from people like somebody wants gluten-free, somebody wants no chorizo, somebody wants the latkes fried in dog fat. Somebody wants them fried in safflower oil, you know.
Okay, but how are you mixing the two holidays?
So, you know, this is really a great opportunity to be festive, Lynn, because it's, I think, the one Jewish holiday where there's no Jewish guilt involved. It is just,
oh my, yeah,
you know, frying foods in oil and being merry and happy and lighting candles, and it goes so well with the Thanksgiving spirit. So it's a doubly festive day for us.
Yeah, because it is. The story behind it is that this is celebrating the temple was destroyed by enemies of the Jews. They finally regained possession of it. Tell me if I'm wrong, because I'm not Jewish. And they cleaned the temple, but there was no oil to burn. There always had to be oil being burned in the temple. And they had only enough oil for one day, but evidently it lasted for 8 days. And that's
exactly
how high. I got it right. I can't believe
did.
It.
You did. But, you know, my kids may run in and correct me because even though I'm Jewish, I'm very ignorant with all of the stories. But that's why it's called the miracle of lights, because it was only supposed to last one day and it lasted 8 days.
So what are you making today to cover all the bases?
So I'm making, okay, so I have latkes with potato and sweet potatoes and apple to combine the Mexican, the Thanksgiving, and the Hanukkah.
Okay.
And I'm frying them in regular oil, but somebody here has been obsessing with frying it in dog fat, which I don't think it goes because you're supposed to fry it in any kind of oil. And then,
I'm not going there.
And then I have my Mexican Thanksgiving turkey, which we've talked about, which is, Lynn, if it wasn't because it is so cold outside, my house smells like a Yucatan hacienda.
This is where you cook the turkey wrapped in banana leaves, and the recipe is on the website. It's wrapped in banana leaves, and it's been marinating, and it's cooked really slow, right?
Yes.
Oh, and it's a Yucatan recipe. It's fabulous.
It's fabulous. And then I made some tamales because I couldn't resist myself. And I'm stuffing them with cranberries and apples and a little bit of orange. And people can choose, you know, if they want to use it as a side with a turkey or if they want to have it for dessert.
This sounds fabulous. Patty, we've got a lineup of callers that want to talk to you. So will you take some questions with me?
It'll be my pleasure, Lynn.
You are wonderful. We've got Raleigh calling from St. Paul. Raleigh, what do you want to talk about? Do you have a question for Patty?
I do, and thank you so much for taking my call.
You are welcome.
My son is home from college for the first time. He's a freshman. And we have a tradition of having all of his friends from high school for a latke party at Thanksgiving. At Hanukkah. But since Hanukkah is coinciding with Thanksgiving this year, everybody is going to have been stuffed today. The latke party is tomorrow. And a number of his friends are both vegetarian and gluten-free. So I would like to know what you would recommend, and if Patty has any suggestions for something Mexican to go with, that would be great. What you would recommend to serve with the latkes to his vegetarian, gluten-free, Thanksgiving-stuffed friends tomorrow.
It is really incredible, Lynn. I mean, how people are just overwhelmed with these requests. I was telling you, Lynn, like no gluten-free, no meat, no pork.
Right,
no.
Exactly.
And I think I have just the thing for you. You can make zucchini latkes, and you thicken them with rice flour.
That's brilliant.
Right? So you grate the zucchini, then you squeeze out the juice out of them, and you mix them with a little bit of rice flour, which has such a lovely grainy texture. And then if you want to spice it up a little, you can add a little bit of jalapeno if you want fresh chili, or you can add a little bit of dried ground chili like ancho or chipotle. Then you add some eggs because, you know, I have a sister who's a vegan and she doesn't eat eggs. Right. Do your kids' friends eat eggs?
Yes.
Then you got it made. Then you fix it with a couple eggs, and then you have these delicious light zucchini latkes.
Oh, they sound wonderful. Now, I normally top my potato latkes with applesauce and sour cream. What would you recommend for a topping?
I would do a crema fresca. If you can get your hand on Mexican-style cream or Salvadorian or any Latin style, if you can't find Latin-style crema, you can use creme fraiche. Or if you can find any of those, you can use also sour cream. And then what I've been playing with lately for latkes is mixing the crema fresca with a little bit of fennel. Both the bulbs and the ferns, and grated lime zest and lime juice and salt, and it's tangy and refreshing.
Oh, sounds wonderful. And anything to go on the side with the latkes, or would you do just the latkes themselves?
No, you can do potatoes. You can do scalloped potatoes or steamed potatoes with some oregano and a little bit of oil. Are you not making any meat? Not at all?
No.
Okay, so go crazy with vegetables. You can do steamed potatoes, and then you finish them up with a little bit of oregano and olive oil and salt and pepper. You have the latkes. What else can we do, Lynn? You want Mexican?
Oh, you know, it'd be great. I mean, I'm thinking of the Mexican theme. How about doing something with corn?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you could do is, and I, you know, granted, it's probably going to have to be frozen corn, but you could saute the corn with some Mexican herbs, right? We could use the oregano, but you could also use a little bit of coriander.
Yeah.
Right? Because the coriander has an orangey taste, too, which I just love. I'm into orange these days. And then a bit of butter or if they're, well, are they vegan? I can't remember now.
No, not vegan.
Not vegan. Okay, the butter. And if you wanted to, that, well, that alone could be really delicious, but you could also add to that, again, just a little bit of that cream. And mm-hmm. by the way, since you live in the same city I live in, I can tell you, you can get the crema at El Burrito Market in St. Paul. And the rice flour, I find it at Asian markets all over the place. And I Perfect. Keep it around because, boy, is it great for coating things.
And it's just, and it works in the same way, in the same binding way as matzo meal would.
Yeah.
You know what I'm also thinking, guys? You can also do a nice roast of sweet potatoes.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah.
Right? Like sweet potatoes. I make mine with fresh squeezed orange juice. And Lynn, can you find in your same market piloncillo or the Mexican sugar?
The Mexican sugar, and it comes in patties, if you'll pardon the expression. and it's brown. Yeah.
So you mix the orange juice with some grated piloncillo, if you can get your hands on some chile de árbol or just red pepper flakes. And you mix it all up. You boil the sweet potatoes just until they're tender. You cube them up. You drizzle them up with that syrup, and in the oven you go. So you have potatoes, you have sweet potatoes, you have zucchini lattes, you have corn, and then you can invite Lynn and I over to your feet.
And we will be there in a flash.
Okay, well, happy Thanksgiving. Appreciate your help.
And to you, Raleigh. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye. Patty, that was brilliant. I had the whole meal laid out in my mind. I could just see it. We've got Waylon calling from Austin, Texas. Waylon, what's on your mind?
Well, I want to talk about green beans. Let's talk about green beans today.
All right, sure. What do you want to do? What do you want to talk about green beans?
Well, we usually boil them, you know, and we usually put a little bit of butter, and we put chicken bouillon on, if you can believe that, with
well,
that.
I can it understand
makes it
that.
Really
sure.
good.
Right.
What do you have in mind that might actually change that up? Because we do that every year with our green beans. But do you have anything else maybe like that we could actually boil with the green beans or some kind of totally different thing that would make them good?
Oh, boy, there's so much you can do with green beans. Right, Patty?
Oh, my gosh. I just made a stir fry, Lynn. Okay, so if you grab your green beans and you boil them just until they're tender, and then you take them out, you drain them. And then, well, and you grab a big saute pan or skillet, and you quickly fry a bunch of scallions. And if you can get your hands on chile de árbol or red pepper flakes.
He's in Texas. He can get his hands on chile de
okay.
árbol. Yeah. Lucky soul.
So a little bit of chile de árbol, and you chop it up, throw it in the pan, a few garlic cloves. I'm garlic clove happy, so I throw in a whole head of garlic chopped up or minced or pressed, and then peanuts. And then once they start to brown, you add those green beans that you have just tenderly cooked, and then you finish it off, Waylon, with a little bit of that chicken bouillon, but you mix it with a little bit of water. So a little bit of that chicken stock, some soy sauce, a little bit of sugar, and mix it up, and you're set.
Sounds, wow. Yeah, that, I mean, that's a killer recipe. You know, the basic thing is with things like green beans and carrots, if you put them in a skillet, give them a little browning, you know, with whatever kind of fat you really like, get them just seared a little bit, and then you throw in something like onion, garlic, whatever liquid you like. It could be the chicken bouillon, but you could also have some apple cider in there. You could have a little wine. You could have tomatoes, whatever seasoning you like. You let them cook covered for a long time until they're really soft and not in a lot of liquid. And then you uncover them and you boil down whatever that liquid is, as Patty's saying, whatever that liquid is, and it becomes a glaze on the beans.
And, yeah, Lynn, that idea of the vinegar is brilliant, too, because you get a little bit of tang in there.
Yeah, I mean, you could throw salsa in there, Waylon. Think about all those flavors you love. Barbecue sauce could go in. You know, or I do red wine, and I throw in all kinds of herbs and the garlic and whatever, and then I let that just simmer and simmer, and then I boil it all off, and I put a little butter in.
Lynn, that barbecue sauce you just said, you just got me. I've never tried that. I need to try that. That sounds incredible.
I've never tried that either. You said red wine and what else?
A little red wine. Okay. Some favorite herbs. So I love basil. I'm crazy for basil. I throw in thyme. I throw in a little bit of sage. And then if you want, a little bit of brown sugar because you want that contrast. And I let that simmer until the beans are really, really soft. And then I uncover the pan and I just boil it all off until the beans are glazed. And they reheat like a dream. They really do. And it's the same idea with Patty's thing. It's the idea of the beans get cooked a little more than normal, but they then pick up all these other flavors and they sit a night overnight in the fridge and then you serve them reheated. Oh, yeah. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Wait, Lynn, Waylon, I have a great idea with your barbecue sauce because you got me going on that, okay?
This is turning in. This is a doctorate thesis that you're getting right now on green beans, Waylon.
So wait, how about the green beans with the barbecue sauce?
Right.
Some cooked onions or you just throw onions in there. And how about to make it super crunchy and like a whole full dish to add a little bit of crunchy corn and garbanzo beans or some kind of beans other than the vegetables, you know, like wings.
That would be fabulous. Yeah,
that is fabulous.
Waylon, have we overwhelmed you totally?
Y'all have overwhelmed me totally, but I just love the idea of actually sautéing stuff down and glazing that over. Never thought of anything like that, so... Ladies, I appreciate y'all's help. And remember, y'all have a beautiful day today and gobble, gobble.
Oh, thank you, Waylon. And the same to you and to all of your friends and family. And fabulous. Well, we've got another caller here. We've got Kurt from North Carolina. Kurt, what do you want to talk about? Hi.
I have a question about ruse.
Ruse, as in R-O-U-X or as in rue the day, R-U-E?
Well, the R-O-U-X may rue the day, but yes.
Okay, go for it. Go for it.
In all my years of making gravy, it's always been on the stovetop, and it's a lot amount of stirring to make sure it doesn't burn or it breaks.
Right.
My brother-in-law, who's a big Cajun cook, tells me that I should make it in the oven.
Oh, that's a brown
rule. What he does is put it in the oven in a large Dutch oven.
Right.
The normal amount, one of fat to one of flour,
right.
And just lets it sit there for like a half hour until it turns brown and
right.
says it's the best thing since sliced bread.
It is, but you got to watch it because it can burn, and you want to keep the heat on the lower side. There's a couple of kinds of roux. I mean, if you're going to get really classic about it, right, Patty, there is the white roux, which is generally what's used for things like white sauce, bechamel sauce. They're the same thing. There is the blonde roux. And I can never remember what you use that for because nobody does it anymore. And then there's the brown roux, and the people who are the artists of the brown roux are the people who cook Cajun food. The people
of the brown roux.
Okay, and this is roasted in the oven essentially. You have to watch it closely. You don't want to burn the flour. And once you've got that made, that can be waiting in the refrigerator, and then you just take a spoonful of that and you stir it in. Stir it into the pan drippings first, okay, so that it gets really smooth, and then add whatever you normally add to make a gravy, and you're home free.
It's basically the same way. It's just that it's in the oven versus on the stovetop.
Oh yeah, and it's just easier to control in the oven because it easily burns on the stovetop. So that's basically it, and it'll be fabulous. It gives incredible depth of flavor.
Well, he's done it for gumbo, and the gumbo's been delicious. So we're going to try it for our turkey gravy.
I think you cannot go wrong, right, Patty?
I agree, but there's also, I think there's something beautiful about making the roux in the stovetop in that you can smell as the roux is transforming and you can decide when to stop, right?
Well, that's a good point. I have to say, I cannot debate that one. Yeah, it is delicious, but you have to pay a lot of attention.
Yeah.
And with Thanksgiving, I wonder...
Concern. You know, you tend to look away doing something else, and all of a sudden your roux has burnt to a crisp.
But do remember, keep your oven around 300 and do check it every 10 minutes.
Okay.
Okay? And stir
it. Thanks so much.
You are welcome. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
And Patty, you have a great day too with your 40-some people. And thanks for taking time to do this with us.
Thank you, Lynn. It's been a pleasure and happy Thanksgiving.
And happy Hanukkah, my dear.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
The glorious Patty Hinnage is the host of Patty's Mexican Table on PBS. Now, you can reach us 800-537-5252. Send us an email. Go to splendidtable.org. Katie is calling from Knoxville. Katie, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Oh, Lynn, you wanted a disaster story, and do I have one for you?
Oh, golly. So, all right, I'm ready. I'm ready,
okay,
Katie.
Thankfully, I'm still praying. It's not happened this year, but since my husband and I, we've been married almost 14 years, and 10 of those years, I've hosted Thanksgiving for both sides of the family.
A noble woman.
So we lived, at the time, we lived in a little house. It was 900 square feet. It was our starter home, and I undercooked the turkey. So we figured it out after, like, we're getting ready to eat. And
oh,
my mom and I are carving the turkey, and there's pink, and there's not supposed to be pink where we were cutting into. So my mother saved the day. She did. She said, no panic. She said, don't worry, we'll take care of this. We microwaved the turkey. We cut it in slices, wrapped it in a plastic wrap, and actually microwaved our turkey. But for the past 8 years, every Thanksgiving, my mother calls me and says, now you make sure to check that turkey. You make sure it's done.
Yeah,
how you can tell. I mean, for 8 years, Lynn. So I can't live this down. I don't know how I can overcome this. I haven't undercooked one since then. But saved the day, but she's not going to let me live it down.
There are crosses we have to bear. She's a brilliant woman. What a fabulous solution that is.
I know.
Well, you know, my mother was the same way. This is where my basting with wine comes from. My mother always believed there was nothing that you put in an oven that couldn't be improved with wine. And there was a year where, I don't know, I kind of messed up the seasoning of the turkey, and I ended up throwing it out before I put it on the turkey. And that's when I started really seriously basting with the wine. And you don't have to overdo it, but I kept basting the pan juices over the turkey, and it was far better than it had ever been, and that's why I based all the time. Hey, well, you want to know one of the really sad-sided, but on the other hand, very, very funny stories from about a year ago. A woman called us from Florida, and she had everything laid out. You know, the hors d'oeuvres were on the table, the turkey was in the oven, and she was going to grab a shower before the guests arrived. And they had a dog. I think it was a bulldog. And she asked her two little kids, to tie up the dog. So if the doorbell rang, the dog wouldn't jump on people. And she's in the shower, and she's just getting out of the shower, and she hears this horrendous sound, absolutely horrendous.
Oh.
The dog has started to bark, ripped off the oven door, and is running all over the house. Now, I fear for the dog, but what a thing to happen on Thanksgiving morning. So count your blessings. All is well. And if your mother calls, tell her you love her. Have a good one, Katie. We have Kathy, in Utah, and wants to know how to thicken a runny cranberry sauce. Boil it down. Just make sure it doesn't stick, okay? And I want to wish you all a very happy Thanksgiving. You know what? I think we have time for one more. Michigan, Ellen, she wants to know, what's the best bourbon to bake with? Personally, I like single cask, but that gets really expensive. So I would use anything you think is really, really drinkable. You don't want something that is in, quote, cooking bourbon. So that's one thing. And by the way, when it comes to wine to cook with, you want something that's dry and tasty. Sauvignon Blanc, Merlot, that kind of thing. Okay? Well, I want to wish you all a happy Thanksgiving and a happy Hanukkah. And be sure to visit our website, splendidtable.org, for information on anything you heard here today, including information on our newest ebook, Eating In, Italian Holidays. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and you're listening to Turkey Confidential from APM, American Public Media.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.